Today's Easter Saturday, and it means Jesus has gone into the tomb. The boulder's been rolled across the front of it, and he's sitting there wondering what he's got himself into. Tomorrow, the boulder will be rolled away, and it's like when we come out of retreat or come out of meditation, then we have to sort of go back into the world. And so that's the, for me, the meaning of tomorrow, of Easter Sunday. But today, Saturday, is this kind of pause and nothing's happening. It's like the world's holding its breath. And reminds me of that moment in breath meditation where you've breathed out but you haven't yet breathed in, or you've breathed in and you haven't yet breathed out. This is a kind of in-between kind of stage, and there's always a bit of a question mark about that stage, because we all know that sooner or later you're going to breathe out and then you're not going to breathe back in again. It's going to happen to us all eventually. Could be any breath. We don't know. And there's this beautiful passage where the Buddha was asking the monks about how they were contemplating death. And one monk said, well, each time I enter the rains retreat, enter the vaso, the pansa, then I think, well, maybe this will be my last rains retreat. I better practice very diligently. So the Buddha said, well, that's very, very, very slack of you. It's very lazy. And so somebody else said, well, every time I enter the rains retreat, I think maybe I won't even finish this rains retreat. And he says, well, that's very lazy too. Somebody else says, well, each time I go out on alms round, I think maybe I won't come back from alms round. The Buddha said, that's not good enough. Somebody else said, well, each time I start my meal, I think maybe I won't finish eating. And the Buddha said, well, that's too lazy as well. Then somebody said, each time I breathe in, I think maybe I won't breathe out. And each time I breathe out, I think maybe I'm not going to breathe in. The Buddha says, okay. That's the right way to practice. Each time you breathe out, is that it? Is that really it? Is that the last moment of my life? I breathe out. This is the sum total of my life. Everything's finished. And death doesn't wait for us to put our house in order. Death doesn't wait for us to finish the project that we're working on. Death's not even going to wait for me to finish the big cave. If when death wants to come, it'll come. And there's nothing we can do about it. One of the most memorable moments I had in my life was when I did a funeral service a few years ago for the daughter of some good friends of mine, a Sri Lankan couple, Madhuma and Nalini Kapagoda. And their daughter died very suddenly. She was giving birth. And she had a very rare immune reaction. And she just had a chance to hold the baby one time. And then after that, her organs packed up and she was dead within the hour. And of course, the whole family was in shock, especially at how fast. There was completely no symptoms, no problems with her, no health problems at all beforehand. Both she and her husband were doctors. And went to the funeral, and the husband said that if he'd had five more minutes to spend with his wife, there would be nothing that he wanted to say to her. That every day he'd lived and had brought that sense of honesty and trust into every moment, and he felt so much love and so much trust in that relationship that he felt there was nothing that he could say, nothing that was left undone, nothing that was left unsaid. That was a very brave thing to say at a funeral. And what a beautiful way to live, yeah? I think that every moment, every minute we live, if death comes that moment, if we fall through the roof, like our friend Patrick, and don't manage to get away with just a broken elbow, then our life's fulfilled, our life's complete. And what better way to die than to die while doing meditation? Wouldn't that be wonderful? Sitting there watching your breath come in, breath going out, and then suddenly that's it. Breath goes out. This is one of the benefits the Buddha said of doing breath meditation, that your last breaths and your last moment, if you practice well throughout your life, then your last breaths and your last moment will be very mindful and very peaceful. You won't be confused and you won't be afraid when the time comes to die. Each time we breathe out, we have that kind of moment when we think that's going to happen. Actually, that happens at a certain time when we're developing breath meditation. And even though meditation is very personal, very individual, and be experienced by everyone differently, nevertheless, there is a series of stages which generally we can recognize and apply. The Buddha summarized these stages we call these 16 steps of anapanasati, of breath meditation. And I won't go over all of the 16 steps this evening, but the part where most of our work is done is actually in the first four of these steps. And so it's worth having an understanding of what these are about. And the first stage, it says, contemplating a long breath. Contemplating the long breath. And then the second one, contemplating the short breath. And so this is very simple. It doesn't mean that you sit down and deliberately breathe long breaths and then breathe short breaths and you think you've done that stage. Remember, this is a practice in awareness, not a practice in breath control. So what happens when we come to sit to meditate is that because we've come from our activities, we've been walking around, we've been doing things, we've been talking to people, we've been working, we come to meditate, then our body is active and stressed. And our mind also is active and stressed. And remembering that our brain actually uses a huge amount of oxygen. Yeah, so our lungs have to pump a huge amount of oxygen to keep our brain functioning. And so that kind of burns up the fuel of oxygen. And so when we first sit down, because we're burning up that fuel, our body is still, the energies are still alive in our body, then we need to breathe more deeply, and breathe, get more oxygen going, to sustain that. Now, as we sit gradually, we pay attention. We bring our attention back to the breath and about watching. And the mind, of course, tends to run around as it will. Okay, this is not a problem. Okay, there's no special solution for that. The meditation itself is the solution. Okay, so don't be impatient. Don't be concerned, don't be worried if your mind is wandering around, if you're thinking about things. Yeah? That's what minds do. That's what they're designed to do. Yeah? That's one of the potentials of the mind, is to be able to think about things. It's not the only potential of the mind, but it's one of them. So just keep on bringing your mind back to the breath. And try to notice the quality, the texture of the breath as it's coming in and out. You pay close attention to it, with fine attention, not just a vague awareness, oh yeah, I'm breathing, but a fine attention. And to see if you can notice each point in the breath. See if you notice that very point where the in-breath starts. Just that little moment, it's just starting, and then follow it through, and then that little moment at the end where the breath finishes, and then a little bit of a wait, the mind's just aware of that, the waiting, and then the little moment when it starts, the out-breath starts, out-breath continues, and then try to catch that moment when the out-breath finishes, and then again a little bit of a wait, keep in mindfulness, and then back again. And so that awareness in meditation is a very fine one. It's a very close awareness. Now, that doesn't mean that it should be tense. And so it's very important not to be pushing too hard. But in the beginning of the meditation, you need to push a little bit. Just very steadily, not hard and not tight, but just gently reinforcing that. Gently reinforcing. And it takes a lot of trust. It takes a lot of faith. And this is why you find that people who have a strong faith tend to, these early stages of meditation tend to go very smoothly. You know? People who have a lot of doubts, who tend to worry about things, then these initial stages of meditation are very rough. It takes a long time to get that establishment of the mind on the breath. We have to trust the breath. We have to trust the meditation. We have to trust that this is what the Buddha taught. He taught us to meditate on the breath. He himself meditated on the breath and had many followers who did it. It's not impossible, okay? And we're all capable of being aware of the breath. We've all done it. We've all known at least one breath. If you know one breath, you can know two. If you know two, you can know 100. If you know 100, you can know a million. Yeah? And if you can know a million breaths coming in and out, then you've got started. Yeah? So just watching each breath coming in, each breath going out. Now, in those initial stages of meditation, many people find that it's useful to use some kind of counting or some kind of meditation word that can hook onto the breath and that helps us to keep applying the mind back to the breath. So some people use the meditation mantra buddho. So in-breath buddha, out-breath to, in-breath buddha, out-breath to. Buddha, Buddha. So this is one that's commonly used in Thailand. Other teachers teach the counting method. So the power system, they usually count up to eight for the Eightfold Path. Yeah? So in-breath one and so on. And that's a good technique. And there's another technique which I like to use, which is a little bit more complex. And one of the things is in the beginning of the meditation that it's useful to give your mind a bit of work to do. Our minds like to do work. They like to do things. They don't like to be still. And so if you try to go directly from doing lots of things, thinking lots of things, to being completely quiet, then it typically doesn't work very well. You have to go step by step. So you give the mind a job to do, which is a bit demanding, but not too demanding and distracting. And so this counting system that I use, I think it was Ajahn Lee, if I'm not mistaken, who used to teach this, or someone of the teachers, I can't remember. But you count in one, and then out one. So you count twice, each number twice for each in-breath and out-breath. In one, out one. In two, out two. In three, out three. In four, out four, in five, out five, in six, out six, seven, eight, in nine, in nine, out nine. And then you turn around and go in nine, out nine, in eight, out eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, back to one again. And then you start again and then count from one to eight. And then eight to one, one to seven, seven to one, one to six to one, one to five, and five to one. And then you do the whole thing backwards, 1 to 5, 5 to 1, 1 to 6, 6 to 1, 1 to 7, 7 to 1, 1 to 8, 8 to 1, 1 to 9, 9 to 1. Right? And if you can get all the way around there, then you're doing pretty good. Yeah? It usually takes about 20 minutes or something like that. And if you stop, if you lose the flow of it, then come back and start at the beginning. And that's one of the good things about that particular method, is that you have to sort of keep in mind, where am I in the whole kind of counting system? And if you lose your mindfulness too much, you can't fool yourself. So if you're doing a simpler one, like a buddho or something like that, it's easy to fool yourself that you haven't lost concentration. Whereas with that counting technique, you always know when you've tripped up. So that's just a trick that you can use for your mind. And there are many different ways of doing this. Okay, so you there's not any one way, and you can experiment with different ways depending on, sometimes maybe you if you're sitting and your mind feels very clear and very calm, and then you just sit and watch and the breath just comes in. You just watch it. It's just so bright and clear. You don't need to do anything. Other times you need to really battle. Yeah? So it just depends on the situation. So, but generally speaking, for maybe 20 minutes or half an hour, then we need to sort of keep on that practice of just putting our mind on the breath. Reapplying the mind to the breath. A little bit of putting going on there. It's what they call, the technical term they use is vitaka vichara, is the application of the mind onto its object. And you keep on doing that, keep on doing that, keep on doing that. Now, as the mind stops or gradually becomes more settled in one place, the mental activity gradually is lessening. The demands of the body and the brain for oxygen lessen. The tranquility starts to deepen inside your body. And so the breath will start to shorten and become more soft and more gentle. And you can actually experience that. Usually you can feel that after maybe 10, 20 minutes or so on of breath meditation. You can start to feel that your breath is becoming quite nice and soft. And so that's moving into the second step of breath meditation. The first one, the long breath, and the second one, the short breath. You're kind of watching that short breath. Keep on watching. And the third step is called contemplating the whole body of the breath. And so this is really interpreted in two ways by different meditation teachers. Some teachers interpret this as meaning that you be aware of literally the experience of your whole body as breathing. Okay, so you sit there, you pay attention to the feeling of your whole body, and you feel that whole body breathing. So that's one way of practicing that. The other way is interpreted is that it means paying attention to the whole body of the breath, the whole movement of breath in and out. And that's the way that I understand that particular passage. And so what that means is that in the first stages of breath meditation, you may, you're aware of the breath part of the time, but the mind is also drifting off at part of the time. So you're sort of being aware, and then the mind wanders, and then you bring it back, and it's aware, and the mind wanders, and so on. And there's not a huge amount of continuity to awareness. And so we keep on bringing it back. And as we do that longer, gradually, we're able to have much more continuity with the breath. Doesn't mean we're, necessarily completely aware of the breath all the time, but generally speaking, you can actually be constantly aware of the flow of the breath in and the flow of the breath out without the mind wandering away too much, maybe just occasionally wandering away, but generally you can be aware of that whole flow of the breath in and the breath out. And this is like the third stage of anapana, is that continuity. Now when you have that continuity, then that's also a sign of even greater level of concentration and stability of the mind. It's one of the important things to remember with the development of samadhi, which is what we're doing here, development of a purified mind, is that we use the word in meditation, we use the word one-pointedness, cittase kagata, one-pointedness of mind. And one-pointedness has a number of implications and a number of meanings. One of the meanings of one-pointedness means that you're one with your object. Okay, so that means you're paying attention to that object, which is the breath, and the mind is not wandering around from that, just with that breath, on and on and on. That's one aspect of one-pointedness. Another aspect of one-pointedness is like one-pointedness in time. So this is like one-pointedness in space. Yeah? Your mind's not moving from one place to another, it's just coming to one place. But the other aspect is one-pointedness in time. It pays attention to that one object and it stays there for a long period of time. And so this idea of continuity and evenness in the mind. The mind's going here and going there and so on. This is not concentration, it's not one-pointedness. One-pointedness. Everything comes together in one place and stays there. And so we have this more sense of wholeness. So what you're seeing here, like this word sabbakaya, a whole body, the whole breath, yeah, this wholeness. And this is one of the great qualities that this kind of meditation is bringing, is it's developing a wholeness of the body, a wholeness of the mind, a wholeness of experience, a wholeness of awareness. It's not fragmenting our mind. And so one of the great disasters of modern life is the fragmentation that it brings into our consciousness. You know, it's constantly being distracted, our mobile's ringing, somebody's calling, you're getting a text message. We're being pulled, our mind being pulled in so many different directions all the time. Yeah? Speed of information, communication, our mind's being pulled, 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 pulled. And we become fragmented, we become emotionally fragmented, intellectually fragmented. So this meditation practice is putting that back together, remembering, yeah? Recollecting, putting everything back together again as one. So this sabbakaya, this word kaya, we translate it as body, but actually in meditation it has a much more subtle meaning. And what it really is referring to here is the one's own inner perception of one's physical reality or the physical dimension of experience. It's not the body which a doctor would come along and cut open, or the doctor or the body that somebody would poke. It's the body that we experience, the body that we witness from within. There's nothing mysterious to this. This is we're all experiencing this right now. Yeah? It's just a different way of looking at it. How do we feel our body? How do we feel embodied here in this place, in this time? And so when we practice this sabbakaya, that embodied reality of experience becomes coherent, it becomes integrated, it becomes one. We feel a solidity to it, a defined sense of who we are. Our field of the fragmentation of our field of experience is being healed, it's being repaired. We feel content to be one, to be whole, to be here. Now, as this stage reaches its fulfillment, then it ripens into the last of these four stages. And remember, these four stages are not like completely separate things by any means. It's just a general overview of a tendency in practice. So it's a bit arbitrary if you say, you know, one stage is ended and moved to another. But we move to this last stage, is the pasambhayang kaya sankhara, is tranquilizing the bodily activities. Now here the bodily activities refers primarily to the breath itself. Sitting in meditation, sitting still, and our body's not moving, we're not doing things. The only thing that moves within our body is the breath and the soft rhythm of the breath coming in, the breath going out. So this is called, in the Pali word for this, it calls the bodily activity, is the energy of the body, the movement of the body. And that starts to become very tranquil. Now that's been becoming calmer right from the start of the meditation. Okay? So all the way through the meditation, that's gradually becoming calmer and calmer and calmer. At this point, that calmness is really starting to become quite deep. And you can feel a liquid depth to the tranquility that you experience in your body. You can feel that this sense of solidity and almost like a heaviness, not a bad heaviness, but it's like a just incredible groundedness, that you're just here and there's no kind of tendency or restlessness or movement that wants to take you out of that. It's just planted right here in the present moment, right here in this body. And as this tranquility becomes deep, then you reach a point where the breath disappears or seems to disappear. This comes back to what I was mentioning before about the idea of breath meditation and the fear of death, like each time you breathe out of never quite knowing whether you're going to breathe in again. And at this point in your meditation, that becomes very acute. Okay, so you reach a point where you really stop breathing. You have no awareness whatsoever of your breath. You're watching in that place where the breath was, and there's nothing happening. And then start to panic a little bit. You start to get a bit nervous. Heart starts to pump, and then the oxygen starts to flow again, and you start to breathe again. Yeah. So this is something that's very important, because at that moment the mind is starting to become very, very delicate. All right. So don't, at that point, don't do anything. Don't be afraid. Yeah? You're not going to keel over and die. And anyway, even if you do, it's a good way to die. It's all right. It's peaceful. Yeah. So that's fine. If you die, that's fine. And you really have to do that. You really have to think. It doesn't matter. If I die right here, that's okay. That's a commitment you have to that. I'm going to stay with my mindfulness. And if it means dying, that's all right. I'm going to stay with that mindfulness. And what you'll notice is that what's happened there is that it's at that point in your meditation, your breathing hasn't actually literally stopped. Your breathing does literally stop at a certain point in your meditation, but that's actually much deeper in your practice. That's what we call fourth jhana. When you realize, practice fourth jhana, your breath literally stops. So that if somebody, if they take you to hospital, they couldn't detect any motion of breath. And there's cases where this has happened. But at this stage of tranquilizing the breath, it's not literally that you stop breathing, but that what happens is that there's a, in the course of meditation, you have a balancing, what they call the balancing of the faculties. And the balancing of the different qualities of mind are coming together. And during your meditation, usually they're kind of out of balance in one way or another. So, for example, you maybe have that maybe energy goes too high, and then you've become restless. Yeah, and you've got to feel that restlessness in your body, or else the energy goes down, and you feel very peaceful, but then you start to nod and to fall asleep. And so this is, you're kind of moving between these things. This is kind of a dynamic balance that's coming. Now, I mentioned before two meanings of the word one-pointedness. We use this word one-pointedness in meditation, citta ekagrata. Two meanings. One is one with the object, right? Staying with the object, not changing. Another one is one-pointedness in time, okay? Having a sense of continuity. Third meaning of one-pointedness is a unification and a balance of all the different mental faculties. Okay? So all the factors which are there in your mind, they start to come into balance. Now this point where you're meditating and your breath stops, what's actually happening is that your faculties are not quite in balance yet, and the faculty of tranquility is a bit too strong and a bit stronger than the faculty of mindfulness. And so the breath slips down below the threshold of awareness. Just it becomes so subtle that it just slips down below the threshold of awareness just for a little while. So you just have to be very careful and be patient. At that point, your mind is very healthy and very wholesome, okay? And you can trust it. It's very important. I mentioned that earlier in the meditation, that when you're starting, that there has to be some doing involved. Okay, so you have to actually do your meditation. You apply your mind to the breath. You place it there. There's some activity going on. But now we're coming to this point where you really have to start to let go of any doing, and that doing will just interfere with your meditation. And you have to have a lot of trust and a lot of faith that your mind knows, a faith in the purity of your mind. That's all. And just being aware of that. Just being aware of that. that those last kind of fine adjustments in the mind, they happen by itself. Okay, the mind comes into balance by itself. You don't have to force it. In fact, you can't force it. Anything that you do in there is just going to muddy the waters. So just stay there and be patient. So if you feel that the breath has disappeared in your meditation, don't do anything, don't be afraid. Just keep watching that same point where the breath has disappeared. Just keep watching patiently. Don't worry about how long it takes. And soon enough, the breath will gradually reappear again. Now, around this time in the meditation, you start to... things start to get interesting. You start to get more profound emotional responses to your meditation, and in particular like the arising of what we call rapture or joy starts to happen. And so this is something that's very, very important in meditation. And in, as far as I know, among the Western meditation teachers, the first one to really talk about this a lot was Ajahn Brahm, and my teacher, and he was the first one who really started to talk about what is your emotional involvement and connection with your breath. Yeah, so it's not just it's not just an exercise in just watching your breath, but it's also a feeling connection, an emotive connection. And it's when you have that emotive connection with the breath that you can't you start to get a deep sense of unity and oneness with it. So Ajahn Brahm would, you know, he would like, you know, notice, like, you see, if he's a mother carrying her little baby, you know, that she's always kind of watching the baby, and they're kind of looking at each other in the eyes. You know? So he talked about doing meditation in the same way. He said it's just like you're holding your own baby, yeah, holding your baby in your arms, and just kind of watching it. And this incredible care that you take in that moment, and also the love and the gentleness, you know, the tenderness of it. And this is so important, that tenderness that's brought to the breath. Very, very gentle. And in that time when the breath is becoming very tranquil, the breath has become very soft, it becomes fluffy, like cotton wool. And we start to see the breath not just as a flow of air, but also as a reflection of the mind. Yeah? And actually, we start to perceive that the mind itself is even more gentle than that. And this is one of the most extraordinary things that you can find in your meditation. That when you take the breath down to a very subtle level, and you're watching the breath very, very softly, very soft flow of breath in and out, and that's so soft and so gentle, like the most pure, soft cotton wool. And yet, when you compare that with the mind itself, it's harsh like steel. The breath itself, no matter how soft it is harsh and rough, like a rasp, compared with the softness of the mind itself. I'm talking about the physical breath here. And so we start to see the mind itself is so incredibly soft, so incredibly gentle. And as the breath, the physical feeling of the breath starts to become so tranquil that it starts to sink below threshold of awareness, then what starts to become apparent is the our emotional and mental aspects of the breath. And so this starts to appear in the mind as a light. We'll feel a sense of joy. The breath itself will start to seem like a stream of light. We'll have a feeling like we can see the moon arising, or like a kind of a mist that's kind of glowing from inside itself. And a feeling of joy and lightness will go through all of our limbs. You know, start to feel happy. So this is that where we're starting to move into. Kind of the first levels of what we call concentration or samadhi. In that particular stage I'm talking about now, is technical term for it is what they call kanika samadhi. It's, they're translated as momentary or temporary concentration. And so that's still, you know, relatively a fairly shallow level of concentration. The mind can still move, it can still wander from one object to another, you can still have thoughts coming into your mind, you can still be distracted by sounds and so on. So it's not like really deep concentration. But still, it's there's a tremendous sense of relief, there's a sense of ease, a sense of letting go. The burdens of the mind, the burdens of the body. And this flow of light and joy and happiness together with the breath. So I don't want to talk too much this evening about breath meditation, but just it's just like a survey of the kind of the initial stages of meditation. And even though everyone is very individual, very different in their response to a particular meditation, but still the things that I've been talking about this evening are not things that are rare or unusual. Actually, most meditators will experience these things, and that feeling of light and of ease that comes into the mind, that can be something which you can develop as a resource and as a meditative place, even if you're doing, you know, have a very active life, even if you may be busy or stressed. But still, if you develop with enough care and enough diligence in meditation, practicing regularly for many years, then you can still find that place, and that can still be there for you at the end of the day when you come to sit meditation, and you can still come and find that place of peace and serenity. And this is a great, it's like a great balm, a great ease for our lives, just to feel that there is a place of safety within ourselves. It's the most important thing we can do in our life. You know, we think how uncomfortable we are much of the time just to be who we are. How uncomfortable we are just to sit in a room. You see people that sit in a room or something like that. You know, you can go to the whatever, to the dentist's or something, and people sitting there and just for a few minutes of just being with yourself, and you already have to seek for some kind of distraction. How uncomfortable we are just to be who we are here and now in the present moment. And so if we can develop our meditation, if we can develop that practice, we'll become comfortable, become at ease with ourselves. So this is all I wanted to say for this evening on the topic of meditation and breath meditation. So I offer that for your reflection. And does anyone have any comments or questions or...